This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this way it is. Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast.
An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
T's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
Hello, we're the Kransky sisters on Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Pleasure to have you with us on this broadcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
And I'm Phil.
And we're all together again.
And it's nice to be had.
Yes.
Something like that. Yes. And first off, we'd like to apologise for last week's show.
Yes. We'll try to do better.
We're going to try to do better today. Yes.
And if you want to find out why, what happened
last to the podcast.
That's right. You'll have to listen to the podcast to hear out why we're apologising for last week's show.
And you can email us on beenthere@joy.org.au.
Now, we've got all the obligatory messages out.
I heard somebody call that obligatory on the radio the other day, and I thought, oh, my God, where did you come from?
Well, you learn all these new words.
Yes, it's true, too, yeah.
Heretic. I think you're a heretic.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
I heard that as well.
Oh, look, the way some people speak the language is just amazing.
No, they're just not exposed to the words. I mean, having been around for as many years as collectively we are, you do tend to hear words on various occasions in various locations. I mean, if you go to the theatre, you can really hear English spoken well.
But Chris, we are all actual readers as well, you know, and we know and we listen and we hear and we understand, you know, which is what's not happening.
And my Simpsons reference for this part of the show, Marge Simpson was running from the wind, right. And Lisa said, "It's wind." And Marge says, "Well, I've only ever seen it in writing."
Well, that's the thing.
That's the thing.
I even heard someone talk about front instead of front. And I thought, why are you doing that? And it's probably from a person who doesn't know that there are various variations of how the various vowels in English can be pronounced.
But, Chris, you've got to understand, too, that English is the hardest language to learn. There are more words in the English language than any other language on earth.
But we're very efficient. We give different meanings to the same word. Well, I don't know whether the weather's going to be good today.
That's right.
Our program is supposed to be, and we will hopefully get there today, talking about history items in history, things that might give us a signpost to the future, tell us about mistakes that we made once and we shouldn't make a second time.
Oh, but we love making mistakes over and over again.
It's part of the learning process. Yes. For kids, I know.
But to err is human. To really foul things up, you need a computer.
Oh, no. You could be an ignorant politician.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Trumbull. Speaking of ignorance.
I reckon that bloke that keeps calling him Trumbull is the most ignorant person that's ever appeared on television.
No, he's dyslexic. He's got a dyslexic tongue.
Well, he shouldn't be the spokesman for the President of the United States, should
he? But he worships dog like the rest of us.
So on today's program, we've got a few notables, musicians, in fact. We'll be talking about Holly Johnson, whoever that person is, listen and find out. Peter Allen, well, we know who he is.
We have a fair idea.
Robbie Williams, there's a person who we know, but you can take that or leave it. Someone who actually influences our lives currently at the moment.
Could one say hugely influences
one could
our lives?
Be because fortunately this particular electronic device has an off button and an on button, and you don't necessarily have to turn the damn thing on, and if you get things on it that you don't want to be interested in, you can turn it off.
Or change channels.
Oh, yeah, we're talking about
the electronic babysitter.
Yes. Yeah.
The box.
And why are we talking about the box?
The boob tube.
The boob tube. Why are we talking about it?
Because John Logie Baird,
mm-hmm.
Where did he get his middle? Oh, he got it from those TV awards.
Yeah, that's right, the awards. They gave him the award.
Yes, he demonstrated the concept of television. Now, the reason I'm so qualified in that statement, telly refers to distance.
Oh, right.
He didn't actually broadcast. He basically said, I can take a picture with this camera thingy.
Yes.
And project, well, not project it, reproduce it on this screen.
Yes. It didn't have to go far.
Well,
probably one room to another or something, was it?
Well, it must have been telly in fine print.
Yes.
But yeah, it was the concept of television and the fact that you could actually broadcast these images, and of course it's led to somewhat of an industry.
Well, they all have to start somewhere, don't they?
Having this planted the seed, other people have sort of developed it in various ways, and someone must have thought of the concept of how a picture is made up of dots or lines or blobs of colour or blobs of black and white, and they would have only had cameras of the era to base their concepts upon.
The biggest change in television occurred in the 1960s, and it was Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz Jr., who set up their studios for their sitcom, were the first people to use more than one camera. They had three cameras and edited it later. So they were recording onto film.
Yes.
But before that, everything was shot like the movies, with one camera, and you'd have retakes from various angles, and things would take forever. They just did their live performance on stage with three cameras and fixed it up later on.
Well, that would be a hell of a change, wouldn't it, from one camera to three?
Well, yeah. That's bigger than colour television.
Yes.
It's just a technique of such a logical way of doing something. My favourite quote from Lucille Ball is that, I'm not a comedian, I'm not even funny. She was just a comedic actress, and the lines were so good that she appeared funny.
But the problem with television these days is there's so much rubbish on it.
Well, that's why we're grateful for the on and off switch. I want to know who we congratulate for that.
But there's such quality programs like Married at First Sight, which I can't say with a straight face.
No, it's hard.
Well, I'm not straight, but...
Yeah.
And not. Marriage Disaster.
And they can put those shows on about marriage at first sight, and we can't even think about
it. We can't even get equality, but they can play around with the concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I find is disgusting, but that's just me.
And we can't get the equality, but...
You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that. Gordon, Phil and Chris.
Trumpets were mellow, and every gal only had one fellow. No need to.
Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon, and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Have you been watching Big Bang Theory?
Never miss it.
Why don't you miss it?
Because it speaks to me. Well, it's not high-tech comedy. It's contemporary comedy set in a high-tech environment.
All right.
But and you've worked in technology.
Geniuses like watching geniuses.
That's right.
Or is it genii?
Genii.
Okay, so this is one of the positive things on Mr. Baird's TV that you enjoy.
Well, yes. It's not all stupid.
No.
It's just a lot of it.
Because it appeals to your technical mind.
It does.
But one of the little things I remember being on there was something about the Mars rover, which is having an anniversary at about this time. On 25th of January 2004, the Mars rover, which was a little wheeled device, landed on Mars and went trundling around exploring.
Yes. Well, I hope Rover wasn't the dog, because they've got a bad record of sending dogs into space. Oh, I can't breathe. No, but to get back to the Big Bang Theory, Howard Wolowitz, who's the MIT-trained engineer, used to entertain his girlfriends or his dates by taking them to Caltech, where they work, and driving the Mars rover around remotely from the control room. And that was going well until one day he ran it into a ditch and lost it. So I'm pretty sure it's fiction, and the rover probably just ran out of power and has just fizzled on.
Well, that was the thing, that apparently one of the Mars rovers, whether it was that one or a subsequent one, I'm not sure, actually got into the bit of a shadow of a mounting and couldn't get its batteries recharged. So solar power for this little Mars rover didn't work terribly well, and obviously the backup battery got flat.
They would have had a limited lifespan anyway.
But they're so far away, you can't change the battery either.
No, you can't send a repair crew up like they did with the Hubble telescope.
But the one thing is that for all those billions of dollars they spent, batteries were included. No other product on this planet till you get batteries.
I hope they weren't the ones that they put in those phone things that kept exploding.
Oh, that was an option.
Oh, was it?
You paid extra for that.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
It's a good way to keep your hands warm.
Yes, must be.
While you're on the phone. What's that smell?
It's wonderful how some of these things are coming to pass, because there have been people in the past who have written books or dissertations or had bright ideas, and then someone else has brought them into being. But I'm talking about Jules Verne, a fellow who's having a birthday anniversary on the 8th of February, because he was born in 1828. And he was a futurist of the First Order.
You'd have to call him a futurist, wouldn't you? Because he sort of imagined things that were going to happen in the future, like the voyage to the bottom of the sea, the submarine.
He wrote a story called The 40,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Mm-hmm. And that, as you said, had the concept of a submarine that could actually go along and see all the creatures under the sea. There was the one journey to the centre of the Earth. That hasn't quite come to being yet, but there's been other fortune-telling that have come to pass.
Yeah, well, he wrote, and he was a very popular author at the time, because it was so far in the future that he was writing, but there was also something he wrote that they said they would never print it, so they put it in a safe and left it there. And it wasn't until his grandson or something rather came along that they said, open the safe and see what that book is. And he had futurized televisions, skyscraper buildings, aeroplanes, and all the rest of it. He thought of all these things.
And he had been well and truly buried.
He was well dead. Yeah.
Wow. But we're going to have an interview with a young Australian writer.
Yes, Robert D. Gennari. And it's a very interesting book. It's called The Battle for Skeptron, The First Uncovering. You're on Been There, Done That with Chris, Gordon and Phil. And in the studio we have Robert De Gennari, who has written a very interesting book called The Battle for Skeptron, The First Uncovering. Welcome to the studio, Robert.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, Robert, why did you want to become a writer just to start with?
Very good question. I found that the medium of writing, I could get a lot of points across and I could help people. I remember as a young kid working in a music store, on my times off, I would sit there and teach people how to play chords and scales on the keyboard. Get into a bit of trouble doing that because I was supposed to be selling instruments. But I felt that I had something to say, and I wanted to say it through the medium of fiction.
And is this not the first thing you've ever written, though?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, okay. It is.
Right, right.
Debut.
Where did the idea from the story come?
Well, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan.
Mm-hmm.
And big Star Wars fan and all the, you know, greats, of course.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, well, I have some ideas of my own. And if I can somehow cohesively mesh all that together with my own spin on it, from my own experiences and my own research I did 10 years of research for the book, I could come up with something really good. And I feel that, yeah, I've done that.
We should tell the listener that the book is a fantasy adventure in the future, on a planet far away in the universe.
Nice. That's right. That's right. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, not taking anything out of Star Wars things. Yeah. But
not far, far away.
Not far,
no,
far away.
Just away.
No. And now, in the book, you basically composed a new language, of course, as well.
I have, yes.
Why?
I felt that if you've ever read Lord of the Rings or watched the Lord of the Rings movies, having a language gives it a weight and a depth. And being from immigrant parents myself, Italian is my background. I'm of Italian descent. I just felt I wanted to give the story a bit more weight with that. And I really felt, from what I've heard from a lot of people, they're like, wow, that's really, you know, a nice little twist you've put on that story by having that language there.
Yes, and it's nice that you do sort of interpret what the language means in certain spots. You will say what that actually meant.
Absolutely.
Which is good, because if you just put the new language in and nobody knows what it is, you'd be trying to shovel it. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But without a shovel, yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you said before that you did 10 years of research.
I did, Gordon, I did. It took a while. I researched everything from forbidden archaeology to astronomy to Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods.
Oh, yes.
I researched ancient Greek history. I researched the Anunnaki, those who from the heavens came, the Sumerian myth. I did so much research, a lot.
Where did this all happen, in the library or...?
Well, some of it did in my local library, but a lot of it just ordering books on Amazon that I was interested in, doing Google searches on the topics that I found were interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I must say, Gordon, we live in a very mystical and magical world, this planet Earth. There's a lot of amazing things that we don't know about this planet.
And there's a lot of things that we don't want to know about.
Probably, yeah.
This is the first episode in the book. How many episodes are you going to write?
Well, anywhere from 3 to 4. I haven't made up my mind on that. I'll judge that as I'm going, because it's something that I don't want to stretch it out if I don't have to. However, if it needs that extra book, it may very well be 4.
All right. Yeah. Yes. So what was that comment you made before, Phil, about...
Douglas Adams with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
I read book 5 of the trilogy. He was a very strange man.
He's a bit different, isn't he?
Oh.
Yeah.
So we might read book 4 of your trilogy. We don't know yet.
When you sit down with a blank piece of paper, or probably something a little more technical, how much of the story's in your head on day one?
On day one, as I've mentioned to many people in the past, basically I have a rough idea of the start, the middle, and the end.
Right.
It's a very basic skeleton, and I then have to go through and then start filling in detail, and that's where a lot of hard work comes in, filling in those gaps. That's a big job. Yeah, so, but I do generally have the idea of it planned out.
Is it like telling a lie?
It's like telling a massive lie.
Because you've got to cover your tracks.
What did I
say last time this came up?
No, you're right. You have to. Yeah, because if that person walks there or goes to that city, well, why did he go there? And he can't just mysteriously turn up there. Mm. You're right. You are right.
Do you have a storyboard or anything pinned on the wall so you can see where every character's going?
I did print out a map, and I just got, you know, red texter, blue texter, green texter, and I just said, right, you know, draw it all out. And if you don't do that, you lose your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really will. So yeah,
because it becomes quite complicated. Not complicated in the book, but you've followed every sort of, they go from sort of country to country while they're trying to get across to Starfall, which is the end of the book.
Yes, you know, exactly. Yeah.
It's the end of the first book anyhow.
Yes.
So, I'm interested to see where Arius gets to.
Yeah.
Yes. He seems to have some strange mystical power coming along somewhere along the line. I think I've been getting that right by reading the book.
Definitely.
That wouldn't be a spoiler alert or anything.
No, it's not a spoiler alert, but everybody would get it when they read the book.
Okay. Yeah, definitely interesting things to come. And it did finish on a cliffhanger, the ending.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And I've been hassled about that.
Why?
I don't know. I love the cliffhanger ending.
Well, that's what they do on television, don't they? Everything on a cliffhanger so you come back for more.
Yeah.
No, you sort of promoting it. This is what's going to happen in the next one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so excited for you to read the next one too.
Oh, good. How long will it be before that's printed?
I'm working vigorously on it as we speak. So, fingers crossed, end of year this year, or maybe this time next year.
Right.
So,
thank you very much, Robert, for coming in and telling us about the Battle of Skeptron, the first uncovering. Now, to get the book, you can go to the website battleforskeptron.com. That's SKEPTRON, battleforskeptron.com. And that's the website, and you'll be able to find it, follow up there to where you can buy the book. Once again, Robert, thank you very much for coming in. I guess you've got a very busy day now. You're going to go home and write some more.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Time for a bit of music.
Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, William Shakespeare, Nijinsky, Alexander the Great, Tchaikovsky, Bernstein, Mahler,
Liberace. Oh, come let us adore them, those legendary children. Add your name to this hall of fame. The answer is clear, they're all of them queer. Add your name to this hall of fame.
Bringing a little joy to your life. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. And if you'd like to contact the show,
you can.
How?
Oh, you can send us an email. And the address is beenthere@joy.org.au.
Very flexible, Phil.
Well, you could also send us an email at beenthere@joy.org.au. That's as flexible as we are.
Now, we've just been listening to an interesting song.
I loved it.
From Holly Johnson.
Mm.
And the song was Legendary Children, All of Them Queer. And there was a huge list of names there and people who we tend to celebrate their comings and goings whenever we get a chance on this show and give a bit of a story. But let's talk about Holly Johnson himself.
He was part of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, wasn't he?
He was. He was the... he had the original concept and he dropped out after a little bit and Frankie went to Hollywood as a band, continued on. And Holly Johnson himself decided to actually drop into the background, but he has come forth again.
Yes, he's just come back again, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Holly actually was part of the 1980s groups who were pushing the boundaries a little bit. It was part of the English revolution of gay liberation at that time. He mentioned in that song Jimmy Somerville, well, last week I think we played one of Jimmy's songs, Beat Man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did he mention our own Peter Allen in that?
He didn't mention Peter Allen,
but we'll come back to him
because we've played his piece of music a little earlier today as well.
Yeah, I just wondered, I didn't hear it.
But at the time in UK, there was actually quite a push to push the boundaries. And there was quite a few songs.
Well, you had quite a few out and proud singers at the time as well, didn't you?
Well, you had like, take that and Robbie Williams.
And now Elton John.
They were going for our community.
Mm.
There was... The Divinals, Pleasure and the Pain.
Everybody was pushing it a little bit out there, making great music with it as well, which is an amazing thing to do. But I don't know whether it ever got... It seemed to fade a little bit after that for some reason. I'm not sure why.
A couple of the other songs that we have had, Boom Boom, Let's Go Back to My Room. Who did that?
That was a modern classic by a band I refuse to name.
No, go be flexible, Phil.
No, I can't do it.
And
Chris can do it.
No.
I know I've played it a lot here on Joy 94.9, but...
it's horribly suggestive. I'm totally against that song. I'm boom, 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 we come back to my room.
We used to exercise to that in the pool and all the ladies used to love it.
Turning Japanese was another one of these interesting songs that sounded very musical and comical, but there was a subtext there, and anybody who was tuned in really knew what it was all about.
Well, it was kind of a secret underground meaning, because they couldn't come out and say, well, the song is about this subject.
No.
So it was...
It's about masturbation.
Was it?
Oh, my God. You're allowed to say that on air, you know.
And it was to indicate that you were having that squinty-eyed moment.
That Japanese look at the end of it.
At the end, at the successful conclusion, the happy ending. And there was a few other songs that were actually quite provocative, including Holly Johnson's Relax, the song that actually put Frankie Goes to Hollywood on the map.
That was one of their really big hits, though, wasn't it?
And that was likewise suggesting, in the words of the song, get to it and get to the point of relaxation.
Chris, when you listen to that Holly Johnson song, the one we just played, Legendary Children, you realise what the world would have been like without those people. What would the culture be like? What would we be doing?
I need to point out one, well, it's not a correction, but so people don't assume that Michael Mouse was any reference to the Disney character.
No, it wasn't. It was.
It was a reference to Michael Mouse, the gay character from author Armistead
Maupin.
Tales of the City.
That's right.
Stories.
He's a beautiful character in that movie, that whole series, Michael Mouse.
Yes, I thought he was saying Michael Mouse as to avoid copyright problems.
No, nothing
not
to
Mickey
do with
Mouse.
Nothing
no.
to do with it. It was,
no,
he's got those big white gloves on there.
Once again, he could have included in there Armistead Maupin as all of them queer, and the elders and pioneers in our community of the current era.
Mm.
Because, once again, Tales of the City was a beautiful series of books, quite interesting little novellas in their own right, and a wonderful TV series. I don't know why they can't bring that back.
Yeah, but if people haven't read... younger listeners, if they haven't read The Tales of the City, you'll probably find them somewhere online because they're great stories.
Set in San Francisco,
San Francisco, and he used to write for a newspaper, and he started writing these short tales about people that lived in San Francisco.
Well, that's the same thing that Charles Dickens did. And he got his break way back in when? Well, in the early 1800s. We can commemorate his birthday, 7th of February, 1812, was his birthday.
His birthday's this week, yes.
So there you are. Yeah. Oh, what a cluey little link that you've included there.
Yes. He was such a little Dickens.
Oh, yes. Very.
Another piece of music that we just played a little while ago was Peter Allen.
Hmm.
Everything Old is New Again. He was born on the 10th of February in 1944, and he was country lad.
Tenterfield?
Yes, and he's done songs talking about his grandfather, the saddler. He was one of those little guys who if he'd been a genie in a bottle, you couldn't have kept him in there.
No, he was talented from the time he was born, I reckon, that man, because even as a child, when he was singing in the pub at Tenterfield, everybody loved him, and he was just a natural-born entertainer. There are people like that, of course, and he was one of them.
I'm blushing.
No.
Oh, not me. Oh, sorry.
I'm so envious. You know, I would have called them extroverts, but only because I'm an introvert, you see.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
But he established for himself a worldwide reputation. He did lots of stage shows, but the main thing that probably got him out and going was a couple of his stage shows.
Well, of course, he wrote the song for Judy Garland, who was his mother-in-law, because he actually married Liza Minnelli.
Why did he do that?
And Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli were very mixed up with the gay community. Like, Liza Minnelli's father was gay, and Judy Garland had married him. And she was very, very fond of the gay community. And at the time, Peter Allen was putting on the big straight face, where he wasn't gay, you know, but all the time he was, of course, we knew that.
Yeah. But, well, it probably wasn't good for his career
one stage. That's right, yes. But then when he finally divorced, Liza came home and found him in bed with another bloke or something or other, she said, well, that's it, you know. And
so did he. That's definitely it.
Yes, I guess so. But then he decided he better be out, and it didn't do his career any harm at all.
No. Now, see, his father was an alcoholic brought on by post-trauma stress. He had been a soldier in World War II, and his father actually committed suicide.
Hmm.
And what an environment to be brought up in, with your family, with your father being so damaged, and then going out like that.
Chris, at the end of the Second World War, there were a lot of people like that man. They just couldn't cope with what they'd seen and been and done. It was just a pretty horrific time.
Mm.
And they didn't have what they have now with the methods to help people get through it all.
No.
Mm. We're still not doing a good job with that, though.
No, we're not doing a good job with that. No, I agree with you there. That's something the government could do something about.
Yeah. Mm. See, Peter Allen, as you said, wasn't comfortable with his gayness, and that's why in 1967 he married Liza.
Mm.
But they divorced in 1974, which was about the time that he was starting to become comfortable with his own homosexuality. And Peter Allen had a longtime partner, Gregory Connell.
Mm.
And Connell was a fashion model from Texas who designed the sound and lighting for Peter Allen's shows.
Mm.
So it was a family concern there in lots of ways. And he actually sang backup vocals to Peter Allen on this song, I Go to Rio, we know.
And there's a lovely scene in the story of The Boy from Oz where he sings a song to his boyfriend. It's just absolutely beautiful. And when it was done on the stage, everybody just sat there.
Yeah.
And it was just so emotional. It was just beautiful.
Well, The Boy from Oz was the Peter Allen story.
Mm.
And, of course, the Peter Allen story had a very sad ending, as you're alluding to.
Mm.
Peter Allen's last performance was on the 26th of January 1992 in Sydney. But he died in San Diego about 6 months later, 5 months later, on the 18th of June, from AIDS-related throat cancer. And actually, his partner, Greg Allen, had died from AIDS-related illnesses in 84 in California.
A long time earlier. Yeah, and Peter Allen was one of the great performers. If you saw Peter Allen live, just realised what a talent that man was.
But we were talking about the musical terms or the time in the early 80s when it was all suggestive and getting quite risque.
Yeah.
Well, that pretty much ended with the AIDS epidemic.
That's right, yes.
Because music, you couldn't sort of treat that lifestyle or promote that lifestyle.
That's right.
Much at all. And because, you know, mid-80s losing so many performers, it changed the industry in untold ways.
There was a whole lot of industries which were changed because of the disease, yes, that's for sure. Mm. I worked at the Palais Theatre when Peter was performing down there, and I tell you what, every night was just stunning. He never, ever dropped a thing in a performance. It was just absolutely perfect every night.
And we do have to thank Peter, Gay Peter, for our national anthem.
One of them, anyhow. Yeah.
I think everybody tears up when they hear that song, I Still Call Australia Home.
That's right. They use the word Australia.
Yes, and they,
not Australia.
And he wrote that in about 30 minutes at the Channel 9 studios.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil, been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Robbie Williams, thanks very much, Robbie, for singing Candy.
And he's having a birthday this week, isn't he?
Oh, I think he might be. Born on the 13th of February, 1974.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. That's close enough to this week, I think.
Oh, yes. Spotty now week.
Yes, yes.
I should point out that eating candy is bad for your teeth.
And bad if you're diabetic, you shouldn't be eating it either.
Well, you can use that to adjust your sugar levels.
Can you? Oh,
if
right.
You go hypoglycemic.
Glycemic. So you put a bit of sugar in.
But I think we were talking about Robbie Williams.
Yes, we were, weren't we? Because of the disease.
He's been part of our gay scene for quite a few years since Take That.
But he's married
the
now.
The early days. He is married now. But would you believe he actually made an announcement that way back saying, I love musical theatre and a lot of other things that are often associated with gays. And then he went on to say, I am 49% homosexual and sometimes as far as 50%. However, that would imply that I enjoy having a particular sort of fun, which I don't.
It's a very ambiguous statement, I would have thought.
Indeed, indeed.
Mm.
But he is a favourite of our community. Mm. He's been a bad boy. In fact, his fame was brought about at the height, though, I would say, of UK popness.
Mm.
And he's been there ever since. Elton John actually helped him out a great deal as well, because apart from his fame in the charts, I think a lot of that went to his head and he started experimenting in all the wrong ways.
With cigarettes and things, yes.
Substance abuse.
And Elton John helped him to get him out of it.
Well, he hooked him into a clinic.
Yes, that's right, because Elton himself had been subjected to a clinical analysis as well and came out of it quite well too.
And so he's suffered like a lot of pop stars have. They just burn out, try and keep themselves going. Even Judy Garland, Liza Minnelli's mother, she was subjected to burnout and all sorts of dreadful things because the film industry required her to be perky when they wanted her to be perky and sleep when not, and they popped her little pills.
They had uppers and downers for her, yes.
And what were the uppers?
I'm not sure.
Benzedrine of one sort or another.
Oh, right. I don't know. I don't know these names.
Which has since been banned, of course. But
somebody, I was watching that thing about Hitler the other night, and they were saying that they injected him with one of these drugs that they've been taking lately.
Ice,
not a methamphetamine. They injected him with, and they gave him pills to take and all of this stuff.
Well, they used to give that to a lot of the pilots at night
to make sure they kept awake while they were flying.
It didn't help Hitler's music career, did it? I can't think of one song that he released.
Oh no, just Sieg Heil.
Oh, it was just a little ditty.
Yeah. But despite all the down things for Robbie, he has made a lot of money and he's reinvested that in the community. He's, like Elton, sort of given back to his musical community as much as he's gotten from them.
I think probably as they get older, they suddenly realise where their popularity came from and they think, well, I better do something for them, give it back.
Yeah. But Robbie probably has invested most of his well-gotten money in a soccer team.
Yes, they all, well, Elton did the same, didn't he? Yeah. Elton's the number one fan of one of the teams.
He bought a team, yes.
He bought a team, yeah.
Yes, I...
But see, that's when you're at the top of the game and you're allowed to be eccentric.
Hmm.
I think what they've both found out is that for all their fame and all their fortune, and I know this for sure with Elton John, being a father of those kids and having a happy married life is...
superior to everything.
Well, it's something to aim for that you can actually reach.
Yeah. And
once you have those high and have, imagine 80,000 people applauding your every move, that's got to affect you.
Yes, well.
And to come down to earth and realise that that's the happy ending.
Yeah. It's amazing the way football has done things for people because even Rod Stewart, with all his fame and fortune, he just loved going to see the Glasgow Celtic, I think it was his team. And that was the highlight of any time that he was in England to go and watch them play soccer.
I think my team would have been Arsenal.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, because there's a few cute ones out there.
And you talk about football, what about the women's footy? It was great. I watched it on Friday night and I was one of the 883 million people or something rather that watched it according to Channel 7.
They were tackling like blokes.
They were having a ball, and I thought, good on them. You
slamming
know?
Them into the ground, yes. And I think this is probably the only sport where they're allowed to actually get so physical with basketball and things like that. Oh, no, it's a foul.
You know, you can't do anything in basketball or netball, and you've got to be careful where your hockey stick lands. But with football, they can just go for it.
There's always roller derby.
Oh, yeah, well, the roller derby, yeah.
That's not a gentle game.
The roller derby women were at the Pride March, too. Saw them at the Pride
were
March.
Were they?
Yeah,
oh, great.
They were, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Were they the ones that skated by?
Yes, that's right.
But it's interesting, too, that the gay community has come up with a few more gay support teams for various AFL teams as well. So it could well be that the women's teams will get a bit of that.
I tell you where you can hear more about the women's football on Joy on 94.9 on a Wednesday evening at 8:30. Chicks Talking Footy. It's a great show. It really is wonderful.
But they're going to have to get a new show, Chicks Playing Footy.
These chicks are not playing. They're talking it. And they've been going for a long time last grid. And now I guess they'll be back in full swing. They have been on the last couple of Wednesdays.
Well, last year they did the commentary at the Pride March.
That's right. The Pride Game.
Pride Game.
Yes. Between St Kilda and Swans, yeah. If you're listening to this, tune in on Wednesday night at 8:30, I think it is, Chicks Talking Footy. Great show.
They will be covering the women's.
They will be covering the women's, that's for sure.
They might have an opinion. Little comment.
Yeah.
Now, we were talking earlier about people who make discoveries, and we're thanking them for them to this day. But we've got a few others around about this time. Let's see, who have we got? We've got Thomas Edison, born on the 11th of February, 1847, and he holds over 1,000 patents for his inventions.
Yes. I think he has a world record of the number of patents held by one.
1,093 or some number.
Yes, really odd number, but he has the highest number of patents of anybody in existence.
Well, just hang around, Apple is still going.
5th of February 1947 here in Australia, cloud seeding by CSIRO experiments were conducted around in Bathurst. Well, last weekend we had that beautiful weekend, rain.
Yeah.
It was marvellous.
But do you know why cloud seeding failed?
Why?
Because when the seeds actually took root and started to grow into trees, they fell out of the clouds.
Yes, sure thing, Phil.
Well, that's what you call.
You're having a lend of us, I believe.
I'm having a literal day. The cloud seeding was to cause rain.
That's right. And they use dioxide.
It was to give a nucleus on which the humidity in the cloud could grab onto, and that would condense the water into a large enough lump of water that it would fall out of the sky with its own weight.
Mm. But it did work a little bit. And they were thought that they were never quite sure whether it was actually from the cloud seeding or whether it was actually natural.
Mm.
Well, you couldn't do a blind test.
No, you couldn't.
You couldn't have one cloud and ask it to rain while you seed the next one to see if you could make it rain.
Mm. Mm.
And on the 29th of January 1886, Mr. Carl Benz patents the internal combustion engine.
Well, he's got a lot to blame for, hasn't he?
Well, there we are. We're almost at the end of the internal combustion engine era.
Because now we've got electric cars.
Well, we're getting them more and more.
Mm, mm, mm.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Gordon.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ball Boys. Thank you, Chris.
Is that the end of it already?
That's the end of it already. Time for us to go. And if you really want to, we'll be back next time, next week.
Yep.
Same place.
And if you've been listening all night, we're sorry.
Yes.
And we'll explain why next week.
Cheers for now.
Bye all. Bye. Thank you.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.